Welcome to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm Peter Hostrasser, the host of Disrupt Education, also known as the Unlearning Coach. Hey, check me out at disrupteducation.co or head over to unlearningcoach.com. You can see how I can help you unlearn all those traditional things that don't really matter in education, because that's what I'm all about and that's what this podcast is about. So subscribe if you can, hit that thumbs up, I would appreciate it. On today's podcast, I have Brian Masseri, and Brian, he's a Renaissance man and a storyteller, and he'll take any experience that he has and turn it into an actionable business lesson that others can follow. You can follow his series at hashtag This Life of Brian on LinkedIn. It's a great way to connect with Brian, and we'll be talking with Brian right after this. Have you ever thought about creating courses and training online? Without a partner to guide you through that process, you're going to be stressed about why your learners aren't engaged or how to create updated content, missing revenue opportunities, and not even having enough time. I know, because I create online courses, and I have a solution for you, e-learning partners. You don't have to be overwhelmed anymore. Become a partner with eLearning Partners to create your courses and training stress-free and achieve the results you want to see. If you are thinking about wanting to create a course or training online and you believe, like I believe, that no expertise should go unheard, then click the eLearning Partners link in the notes of this podcast and you can start your journey to create your courses and training stress-free. If you want all that and more from the eLearning Partners, hit the link in the podcast notes, because there's a free masterclass for you to take. That's right, a free masterclass. Hit that link today. The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Welcome to the podcast. It's Disrupt Education. I'm Peter Hostrasser, your host. I have a great guest today. Brian Masseri is here. And Brian, you know what? You are a man of many, many, many things. And so I'm going to let you introduce yourself, but I will tell you, it does say Renaissance man on your LinkedIn. So I'm going to start there.
It does. And I'll actually start with that. First of all, thanks, Peter, for having me, man. I really appreciate this honor to be on your podcast. And I love listening to the episode. So very cool for me to now be on it talking to you. So I appreciate it. Yeah, the Renaissance man, where does that come from, right? Well, I got to tell you, I struggle with that, on whether to do that or whether to put that or not. I'm like, is that a little weird to put that for yourself? Don't other people, it's like, don't sing your own praises, right? Like, you let other people do it. So I was like, is that weird? And ultimately I decided, you know what? No, I'm probably in my own head. I'm going to do it. And where it comes from was somebody actually said it to me. Somebody I respected on LinkedIn. We were just having a cool conversation. She was in esports, in the esport industry. And we were just sort of one of those cool things with LinkedIn where you sort of reach out and you get on a phone call with somebody that you really don't have any agenda with. It was just like, I think you're kind of cool and you're doing this cool stuff in esports. I don't know anything about esports. And she said, I was telling her my history, and she just kind of said, like, yeah, you're a bit of a Renaissance man, aren't you? And I just, like, after the call, I told my wife, I said, I think that was like one of the coolest compliments I've ever gotten. You know, it's just a cool way of sort of summarizing. Yeah, I've seen a few things, or like I like to quote the commercial. I know a few things because I've seen a few things. Yeah. that sort of sums it all up, you know, after 42 years. So, yeah, that's where that comes from. But, yeah, let me give you what do you want to know? What can I tell you about my
past? Well, let's just start. So you have a lot of things listed there on LinkedIn, right? So right now, where are you? What businesses? And that's plural, because I know you're in many spaces. Yeah, but yeah. What kind of things are you doing right now?
I work for a data analyst company, or a data analytics company, but I'm actually the digital strategist at the moment for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking care of everything. Really got into it for the videos. They started using me because I had a background in making videos specifically for the company's LinkedIn page. And we were seeing a lot of success with that and working with different partners and different things. And so that's been a lot of fun. And that's kind of what I'm doing. The way I ended up in that job was just really a love for data. Mm-hmm. And I, previous to that job, my wife and I were running our own online nutrition company called NutritionWide. And so we were catering to the CrossFit crowd, which will make sense because of the job before that, we owned a CrossFit gym. So when we sold the gym after 5 years, built it up from nothing, from zero to an 800 square feet and zero athletes up to 5,000 square feet and about 115 athletes. We sold it in late 2015. We really, at that point, we sort of sold it faster than we had an idea of what we were going to do. Hmm. And people actually said, oh, we didn't know you were looking to sell the gym. We said, we didn't know either. Just opportunity came. And I sort of hung up the phone with my instructor who said, hey, I'm going to open up another gym. And I said, oh, that's great. That's fantastic. Really, really excited for you. And hung up the phone, called my wife, said, hey, you know, so-and-so is opening up another gym. And I said, you know, my first thought on that call was, I kind of wish he was buying our gym. And my wife, in all her infinite wisdom and everything else, and just an amazing person, said, you know, that's not the first time you've said that. And I said, you're right. And one thing led to another, and we actually ended up selling the gym to them. So then we were basically left businessless. Yeah. I was jobless, actually. I sold the gym and that was great, but I was jobless. And so we decided, with my wife being a dietitian, it made sense to go into the nutrition field. And so we started an online company that catered to CrossFit athletes around the world. Had a lot of fun with it. And we didn't do supplements, which is what ultimately people think we did. Like, it right. sounds like a supplement company. What we actually did was we leaned heavily on my wife's expertise as a nutritionist, a dietitian, and we created customized nutrition plans. So athletes could basically go on to our website, answer a few questions about themselves, goals, body styles, things like that. And it would actually output, if you will, customized nutrition plans that they could follow, along with, here comes back the video part of it, about 40 different videos that we scripted and wrote and shot with my wife, talking about the different parts of the nutrition plan, giving her expertise on this is why it's important, whether we were talking about macros or whatever the case was. So that's what we did with that company. And in those two companies, and probably before, if I'm being honest, prior to that, I was a firefighter for many years. Mm-hmm. Here's the Renaissance man.
Right.
It starts to get right.
Yeah, no, I love it.
But anyway, always had a love for data. Always knew that there was something more to it. It was like, I don't know. It was like shifting, and I could tell I needed to get my hands around it, but I didn't know how. I really didn't. And I was running this company, and data was pouring in by the bucket loads, by the rows and rows and rows of data, and I just really couldn't make money off of it, essentially. I mean, at the end of the day, I just was not capitalizing on the data. So I've kind of, you know, been all over. I've been everywhere, man, you know, type of thing. Like I said, I did firefighting. The firefighter thing, I was over in Iraq for 15 months.
Wow.
That was interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I did that as a contract firefighter in Baghdad. Mm-hmm. Got an amazing experience over there. And before that, I was a domestic firefighter in the Atlanta area for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it's been a ride, and it's pivoted. You know, the theme is pivot, you know, and right. Sometimes I knew it was coming, and sometimes you got to roll with it, you know.
You missed one piece. You're an author as well, right?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
I
you wrote a book as well. That was tell us a little bit about that. I got to give a plug for that, right?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's been a few years, but yeah, for sure. So the book is called Hello, I'm a Sugar Addict, mm-hmm. which is a great way to start explaining it. So yeah, among many other things, it turns out I'm a sugar addict. And it's something I didn't really know existed until several years ago. Going on 7 years, this May will be 7 years that I've been quote unquote sober. And yeah. I'm careful about using that term because there's right. so many people that are dealing with major, major addictions. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of people who actually legit do have a sugar addiction. And so around 35 years old, I realized, I had a problem. I realized that, my daughter was young at the time. She was about two, and I was struggling. I had gained weight, was just generally unhealthy. The irony of this whole thing was I owned the CrossFit gym at the time. Oh, I was the head instructor at the time and was closing up the gym and going and getting three Dunkin' Donuts before I got home. Oh. And then I was hiding it, mm-hmm. you know, so then the shame comes in. You're like, well, I'm hiding it because I don't want my family to see that I have I didn't really recognize it as a problem at the time. And so I didn't know what to do. I knew I had a problem. Easter of that year came through, and I just almost was, oddly enough, out of control at a relative's house in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it sounds silly now, but it really was a big deal. I mean, I just couldn't stop eating jelly beans, and I was hiding it, and I wasn't telling anybody. Mm-hmm. I remember my brother saying something to me, and he just kind of looked at another piece of cake, and he didn't mean anything by it, but it was all in my head. And it just had a big impact. And then really the final piece was my daughter. Like anything, your kids will change you, you know, you'll abuse the crap out of yourself until you have a kid or a wife or, you know, you say, well, I can't keep doing this. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I got to fix this. And my daughter, when she was little, would look at a water bottle and say, mommy's. And she would look at any soda bottle and say, daddy's. And of course she's just two, and she's just, or one at that point, probably her name, you know, recognition of things. Mm-hmm. And so proud on her face. And I was basically crying, like legit. Right. And so I decided I need to fix this, because this is really leading towards pre-diabetes or worse, truthfully, a shorter life for sure. Yeah. An unhealthier one. Cut out all added sugar, cold turkey. Realized I had a couple, tasks for doing that were working for me, I felt like could help other people. And so ultimately I decided, you know what, let me see if I can help other people. And so I wrote that book, and it's a little bit of a memoir of growing up and there always being, you know, I grew up in New York, and my grandfather and two uncles of mine at one time all worked for Entenmann's. So if you're from the North and you know Entenmann's, I guess Entenmann's is everywhere, but I have strong family memories and emotions attached to Entenmann boxes, damaged Entenmann's boxes.
Fell off the truck.
A lot of falling off the truck and stacked about six high on top of the fridge. Yeah. There was always the blue and white boxes. Mm-hmm. And so I have great, great memories attached to that, like a lot of people do with food. Yeah. And so I think that was a lot of it too. It's just one of those things. I'm thrilled that I was able to recognize it and I struggle with it daily. You know, people can eat cake around me and stuff, and I don't lose it, but you know, it's a constant thing. And it is amazing, man. When I won't say slip up, but every once in a while, you can just get sugar and not realize you had it. Right. You're in the same. And, there's no doubt about it, man. My brain is 100% ready to welcome me back. It's crazy. I guess that's addiction, right? At the end of the day, I've never had a problem with, I've never smoked or done drugs or had any other addiction. So I don't have anything else to compare it to, but I imagine that's thing. It's like a little demon in your head and it pops up.
Yeah.
And, it's ready to go if I'm ready to go. And that's the scary part. So,
well, that's part of your self-learning journey. And that's kind of where we're going with this, right? Like actually writing a book. I mean, I've tried several times and I'm working on it again. And that's difficult. And you know, you kind of taught yourself that through, you know, your experiences, but let's go back into those experiences. Let's talk a little bit about New York, Atlanta, all over the place. You know, you lived in Europe, I think in previous conversation, we talked about that a little bit. What was your learning journey like? You can talk traditional education in schools, and then also obviously, you know, writing the book is kind of a memoir. That's a learning experience as well. Let's dive into that. What was that journey like starting school? In New York, I'm guessing. Is that where we were when you started?
So let's talk about both, because I think you're right. I mean, there's the traditional path, right? And there's the things I went through there, but, you know, I'm obviously we're all still learning, you know, I mean, I don't think my learning journey is done. I seem to have learned more post-college than pre-college, you know, and I hope that's the case for a lot of people. It certainly hasn't stayed static. I grew up in Atlanta, south of the airport, because my dad worked for the airline industry, and one thing led to another, and we ended up in Atlanta. He worked for Delta. Mm-hmm. So that's really the majority of my childhood, from 87, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, on really to college. So I went to the University of Georgia in 96. So, you know, went to the local high school, and that was all normal and nothing really there. Went to UGA, and I know we talked about this before. Mm-hmm. UGA was interesting. So I did okay with learning. I was okay. I was never a scholar student. Nobody was offering anything AP to me or anything that sounded like that. Mm-hmm. I was just okay, but I wasn't like remedial either. I was just in the middle. I was, you know, not a problem, I guess. I was just floating through the system. And so it was enough though to get me into UGA at the time. And I struggled. I struggled in at UGA. The classes didn't come easy to me. In fact, I just posted something today, a funny story, and I'll give you the quick rundown of it. Freshman year, first quarter, at that time we were on quarters, mm-hmm. and in my infinite wisdom, all my education at 18 years old, I decide I'm going to take Latin because Latin is a dead language, and how could this possibly be hard? It's a dead language. And of course, you know, I could see you laughing, and I, you know, everybody else listening to this is probably thinking, man, what an idiot. And that's exactly what happened. So I get into this course and it's immediately hard. I should say Dr. Best is the instructor, right? Mm-hmm. Dr. Best, we walk into the classroom. This is literally my first class on my first day of UGA. So couldn't be any more like instrumental Matt Collins, right? And he says he's memorized the attendance list. He's memorized.
Oh my
God. And
gosh.
So he has us all stand up at the blackboard, and then he just says, Mr. Johnson, Mrs. Whatever, Mr. Masseri, right there in that desk. And he used to call me Mr. Masseri with the ERE ending, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was Latin was had ERE endings into it. So fast forward, I struggle. I become part of the hallway crew, which is just a bunch of us who all struggled in the hallway, spending multiple hours in the library. Gets all the way to the end, and I am hanging on by a string. And the final exam was, he said, you're going to have to take a written exam, and then you're going to have to come across the hallway with me one by one, and I'm going to have you translate out of this 9-story series that's about Roman gods and such. And I know I don't have a chance, right? I know I don't have a chance. So prior to the exam, I decide to memorize all 9 stories in both English and Latin. Ooh. I don't know what they say, but I know, but I can say both of them verbatim, right? Mm-hmm. He pulls me across the hallway. Mr. Masseri with the ERE ending, will you please translate story number 3? So I turn to story number 3 and I hold the book up in front of my face and I don't need it, but I look at the page and I say, Iapetos duos filios, Prometheus et Epimetheus hapes, Irene sepienti, right? And I rock it. I rock it.
Yeah.
Dr. Best leans back in his chair with this astonishment on his face. And he says, Mr. Masseri, I got to be honest. I didn't think you were doing so well in this class, but you really have seemed to have brought it home at the end here, you know, being very honest with me. Mm-hmm. But he was a scary guy. And I was just a freshman, you know, and I said, I didn't say anything. And he said, would you do me the honor or the favor or the pleasure of conjugating the verb in the 4th sentence or the whatever? I just shut the book and I said, Dr. Best, I got to be level with you. I mean, the jig is up, right?
Yeah.
I have no idea how to translate this. Latin has been so hard for me. I've memorized all stories in both, you know, all 9 stories. And he said, Mr. Masseri, if you promise never to look at me, say hi to me, wave at me in the hallway for your next 3.5 years at UGA, don't even come in the English, you know, building, I will pass you with a D. And I said, done.
Oh, wow.
And I got out of there. And that was Latin for me. So that wasn't every class at UGA, but that was the one that I was probably the most proud of. I was proud of that D because, you know, like my video today that I have this series on LinkedIn called This Life of Brian. And that was my video actually today. And I was saying, you know, just sometimes you got to do what you got to do. I mean, it's not pretty. It's not fast. It took me forever to learn those stories in both languages, but you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
So the rest of the years at UGA went along and I got my degree. And I remember distinctly calling my parents and saying, you know, mom and dad, now this part was true. They had switched from quarters to semesters halfway through my college and everybody did lose credits. It was unfortunate.
Right.
And I was starting to sweat. I was already taking classes through the summer. Past my freshman year, I lived there and took classes, worked at the local 420,000 square foot recreational facility that was on campus. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal job. And I was doing my best. And so I called my parents and I said, you know, I don't know if I can get out of here in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And my parents very calmly explained to me on the phone, that's fine. You could take more than 4 years. However, you should know we're not paying for more than 4 years. And I said, you know what? I think I can do it. I think, you know what? I take two classes in the summer. I can get out of here in 4 years. And they thought, that's what we thought you'd say. Yeah. You know, so my dad still likes to give me, he likes to nudge me about that. And he tells the story a little differently than I do. We have different memories of that phone call, but it's fun still to laugh about. And so I got out in 4 years and I got a degree in geography. And the reason I did geography was not for my love of it. It was literally the first class I got an A in. Right. In college. I mean, and so I thought, man, I better not mess this up. I mean, in 4 years, I got to be out. You know, who am I, you know, to blow against the wind, as Paul Simon would say. And so I said, yeah, I better major in geography. And I minored in history and I got out of there. And this is right up your alley. That's because I thought, I just need a degree, right? Buddy. I just got to get a degree and the jobs are going to come rolling in. People are going to be so impressed with me and my degree from UGA. I'll be knocking people back. This will be amazing. And crickets, yeah. Crickets. And I moved to Orlando and had thought I was still in college. Apparently I drank a lot and had a lot of fun with friends, but was making no money and bounced between, you know, inside sales jobs and that wasn't going to work. And then, I made my way to Wells Fargo Financial and, you know, had a job there and, moved back to Atlanta during that time. Mm-hmm. My mom was unfortunately sick with cancer, her first bout of cancer at that time. And, you know, mom said, you know, look, come home, basically come back to Atlanta. And I said, I just started this job. And right. My mom said, your mom has cancer. Tell them your mom has cancer. And I thought, well, if you're saying it's okay. I mean, I get, you know, it's just one of those things, right? You're young. And mm-hmm. the company was actually really cool to let me move back. And so I did that, but I had a love for firefighting. I knew it. Mm-hmm. Went to night school, more education, right? Yeah. Went to night school to become an EMT because that was the way in the door. Happened to be studying with a girl who had an inside track at DeKalb County Fire Rescue, where I work, DCFR. Mm-hmm. And literally almost the day after I graduated, I had an offer at the firehouse. And I was about 23 years old when that happened. So, you know, a little bit of bouncing around after college, yeah, for sure, because those jobs weren't there. But I've always had a passion for helping people. Nothing makes you feel better. I think everybody would say that. And so I thought, man, what a cool job this is. I get to go knock down doors, fight fire with water, you know, drag people out, save people, work on people. I was an EMT and I got to do all that at some point. I mean, I have some really, really amazing stories and some that I can't share because they're a little on the firefighter humor type stuff, right, you know, right. Tough situations, but firefighter humor at the end. And so that was wonderful. But during that time, I decided to go back and get my master's. Mm-hmm. That was interesting because I got a lot of pushback from people who were within my department, who just really felt like, who was I? Was I just trying to show them up? Right. Very common for captains and chiefs at that time to only have maybe a high school degree, maybe a 2-year degree. Mm-hmm. That's all you needed. And so I respected these people. I thought they were amazing. And I was trying to learn from them. But for some of them, it was a real assault to, yeah, be this young kid going to get his master's. Because who was I to do that? You're a rookie. Who, you know, don't even look at the ladder truck, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that was tough. I had to be careful about who I said that around. And I would study at night at the firehouse and things like that. But got my master's degree in executive fire service leadership. And nowadays, I just say executive leadership.
Yeah.
Online, Grand Canyon University, amazing experience because I was in there with a bunch of chiefs and captains, really, mm-hmm, chiefs, really, because they were going through their thing. And so I got to learn from these amazing men and women who were in it, right? And they were managing scenes and they were managing stuff. And I just met some amazing people and I would write, everything was paper-based. So I had to write, when it was all said and done after 2 years, I wrote like 200 professional essays, you know?
Wow.
And no tests, which was perfect for me,
yeah,
because I could write, but mm-hmm, I wasn't great at test taking. So it was actually perfect. Got a 4.0, amazing experience. And then, one thing led to another. Thought my wife got a job. She finished her master's degree. We came down to Tampa, thought we would, you know, I'd just be a firefighter down here. I thought I'd retire at 28 years or whatever, you know,
yeah,
and, wasn't a medic. And that's what ended up hurting me in Florida. And that's when about 9 months later of being jobless, really, mm-hmm, and not really knowing what I was going to do, because I just thought I'd be a firefighter. I had all the qualifications. I had had reciprocity for this, for the state I thought I was in. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have the one thing I needed, which was medic. So mm-hmm. I started medic school. I actually got basically hired by the sheriff's department locally with the intent of, I didn't want to be a cop, but I knew that if I put in 2 years with the sheriff's department, I could inter office transfer back to firefighting. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, pension's pension, right? Just get in the door,
right?
You know, do what you got to do. And then the company called that got me over to Iraq. And so I ended up being over there doing contract work, not really firefighting. I was actually at headquarters mm-hmm. working in the training department. And another great experience of just learning and listening and screwing up and being told to stay in my lane and know your role. And yeah. Okay, I overstepped my bounds there. And, you know, here I am getting yelled at again. I must have done something wrong. You know, perhaps they didn't want my opinion today on that. You know, all the things you do is I still do. Who knows? You know, I haven't gotten that much better. But yeah. You learn when it's time to, you know, be mm-hmm. quiet and listen. You know, and observe and watch how people are interacting. It was a really interesting place because, you know, you're on a base and it was just interesting, you know, right. I mean, you're walking by bunkers every day and we would have incoming and have to go run to the bunkers. And that was just part of your day. And I worked 12 hours a day, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., mm. 7 days a week for wow. 4 months at a time. And then you would get to come home for a couple of days.
Wow.
And so my wife and I would go on these, I was getting paid okay. Mm-hmm. So we went on these trips and we saved our money. And my wife was pregnant, so I had to come home. And yeah. So my daughter was born about 2 months later. And so, yeah. And then we saved up enough money to open up our own business. And that's how the CrossFit happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like I've education, man. I mean, everything from the formal, but so many other experiences that have shaped who I am, what I do, great mm-hmm. mentors, people that I despise. And of course, they teach you just as much.
Yeah.
You know, it's yeah. Sometimes it's the people that you don't want to be anything like that are your greatest teachers, whether they want it to be or not. And you're just like, well, whatever I do, I won't do that. I won't right. treat employees like that, you know? And so that's really helpful sometimes. I mean, nobody wants to have those jobs.
But. Right. Coming up right after the short break here, Brian and I go a little bit deeper into his daughter and how she's young. She's 10 and actually a gymnastics coach. Well, he'll go into that story and talk a little bit more about how we need to put some finance and banking and business in front of kids at an earlier age. Hang on, we'll be right back on Disrupt Education. I recently asked Jake, who is a sophomore in high school, why he uses SpikeView to share his learning journey.
I think it's really cool that, you know, SpikeView is really putting that abstract into concrete data and knowledge and then displaying that to the outside world. And I think SpikeView is different than anything else out there. Like I said before, because it's really taking that, you know, that those abstract skill sets and those abstract experiences and putting them into data that, you know, is actually mathematic and scientific and, you know, that matches you up with the best programs and, you know, best places for you. People, you know, who are really trying to make those changes in the world, and they're going to be using SpikeView because SpikeView is that app where you can, you know, take those experiences and take those passions and put them out there. And share with other people. And that's, you know, that's really powerful. And to that, you know, that professional networking piece, you know, to be with other like-minded teenagers, that puts you ahead. That puts you ahead in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think anyone who uses SpikeView right now has a leg up in the future and excited to see, you know, where those SpikeView alumni head up.
Head to SpikeView.com. Start your portfolio now for free. Right. Yeah, I mean, you know what I love? I mean, there's so many levels in there. And as we were talking, you are a renaissance man. It's awesome. And you're learning as well, which is, I think, so key. You know, traditionally, a lot of parents are thinking, yeah, they just want safety for their kids, right? I'm sure your old man was just like, you know, Brian, can you just, like, you know, work on planes for the rest of your life and we'll be done with
God,
it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And now that you we're
would be
parents,
more than happy for me to be a career man, yes.
right? And now that we are parents, we know that the economy has changed, the gig economy. There's so many different things, and throughout that, it's interesting because I also dealt with. you know, I worked with some really great electricians and I learned so much. But when I was in school, it was, you get that pushback, or there was, you know, a lot of assumptions and different things that were made. And you really learn how to work with people. Right. And I heard that in your story through with the, you know, the firefighters and everything. And so we're here. We're both fathers. Actually, your daughter is a little bit younger than my daughter. I have a 12-year-old. You have a 10-year-old, I believe.
And yeah, she just turned 10.
How is that going? As a father, going in into education and looking into different things, your daughter's doing some pretty amazing things. And
oh, I appreciate that.
You know, and in our previous conversation, even you did some pretty cool things at 15. You know, with karate, I think you left that part out and everything. But
yeah, that was my first job.
Right.
That I got lucky, I guess. I mean, I just started karate as a sport, loved it. Mm-hmm. My dad had done it years when he was a teenager to in his 20s. He had done judo and jujitsu, and but that didn't really play into it. I guess maybe that's why he got me into it. I was playing soccer at the time.
Yeah,
you know, moved to Peachtree City, where we lived in Georgia, and started with this brand new studio. Guy named Mark Dumas, who still owns the studios and is a good buddy of mine, was 19 when he opened it. And his parents said, as far as I remember, his parents said, we can give you the same amount of money for college or you can start a business. And he started a business. Wow. And I was one of his early students. And that just, one thing led to another, got my black belt when I was 13. And it just so worked out that it just naturally transferred into being my very first job and only job until I left for college. Mm-hmm. So I had an odd experience where I was being paid at that time. Minimum wage was $4.25 an hour and my starting salary was $7.50. So nice. As far as I was concerned, I was rich. I was rich. And I let my friends know. I would buy stuff for them. You know, I was that friend. I would buy their McDonald's for them, you know. And Ryan's got money, you know. Yeah. I'm just rolling it at $7.50 an hour. Minimum, part-time too, right? Mm-hmm. Not even 40 hours a week. And so that's what I did after school. And it was amazing and also an incredible learning experience because I didn't get away with anything.
Right.
Mark was the kind of guy that, he's obviously only not that many years older than me, really. Mm-hmm. But he was really cool about saying, one of the things I remember him saying is, I would say, I can talk a lot, obviously, if you haven't been able to tell. And he would say, Brian, like 9 words or less, you're going to have to tell me what it is you need. I was always so offended by that. Like, I can't possibly say something in 9 words or less. It's not in my, it's not, you know, but I've learned, right? I mean, you got to be succinct sometimes and get your point across. And he was the very first one, but I was so young that I was just like, I couldn't believe he was saying that. How dare you say that? You know, and it ended up being an amazing lesson. He was an amazing first boss because I, at a very young age, got to sit in the office and listen to a business being run.
Right.
I watched checks being written. We discussed as a group who got their next level belt and who was ready and who wasn't and what parents were mad and what were we going to do about that. That this parent was livid about something we did with their kid or whatever, you know, or their kid not moving up. And so all those interactions and just getting to be so young and sitting in that and absorbing that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
So you were talking about my daughter. And so, yeah, that was my first job. Mm-hmm. My daughter is 10. Her love is gymnastics. Mm-hmm. So she loves it. She really got into it as we sort of hit the lockdown from COVID last year. And so she had a lot of extra time at home. We had some equipment at home, but she wasn't super serious about it at the time. Mm-hmm. Started watching some YouTube videos of some girls that were doing like stretches and things like that. And just, I don't know, like a moth to flame. I mean, she just, I want to do that. So she started stretching, and to her credit, man, she got herself flexible, and that led to her being able to do more advanced moves of gymnastics. And so we started talking about businesses because, you know, we've always talked about being entrepreneurs and what does that mean? And, you know, what is an entrepreneur? What does that mean? What do you do if you're an entrepreneur? And so we were talking about her business ideas and what would that look like. I had her going through some courses in addition to her classes, because she was taking online classes at the house. But I also had her taking typing lessons. So she's fluent and she can type at 10, which I thought was helpful. And so that's been really helpful. And then I also had my wife, I shouldn't say I, every bit of this is my wife, had her taking like a kidpreneur. course. Mm-hmm. And so there was a book to go through and a workbook and everything else. And ultimately out of that, she thought she, you know, like a lot of kids, she might want to do the YouTube thing. Ultimately, she said, you know, I just want to be a CrossFit, a gymnastics coach. Mm-hmm. I happen to know the owner from my past business. I happen to know the owner of the local place where she was going anyway. We had a conversation. I said, hey, have you ever had like an intern or whatever, like, you know, like that? And he said, how old is she? I said, at the time, I said, 9. He said, 9. And he had the, again, right, the right people. Yeah. He had the best response. He said, man, Brian, I love that. I would never want to squash her dreams. If she's got a want to do something, man, I just want to do whatever I can to fan that flame. And I mean, you and I both know how many people we've run into our life. There's not many that have that answer for 9.
Right.
And so I felt so great about it. And so, yeah, my daughter now for over almost a year, believe it or not, maybe a little less, but almost a year, she's been interning twice a week, and she helps out with the 3 and 4 year olds, and she loves it and she's great at it. And so what my wife and I do, because that's a free internship, you know, she's 10, you know, so she's not on payroll, but my wife and I pay her minimum wage, which now is like $8.63 an hour.
It's more than your cash days as a teen.
Yes, it was. So we pay her and we use the Greenlight card, which I was talking to you about. And that's, we love that card because you can talk about compound interest and you can talk about investing, and we can split her paycheck up into different buckets of saving, giving, and spending. So she's able to actually look on the app or can ask us and see how much she has to spend and make good decisions about it. But, you know, also on top of that, she also, without any prompting, decided to use some of her money to buy, you know, grandparents some Christmas gifts. And I thought, well, that's awesome, you know. And she's a good kid, man. And she really is taking the gymnastics and coaching, which I love. But, you know, we're talking about it, and going is, you know, she is only 8 years away from college,
right?
And that both delights and scares me, you know, as a parent, obviously. And we put money aside and 529 plans, they're called down here, you know, just basically investing in your kid's future right here. So we've invested and we've done that, and we've calculated the numbers, and is this enough, how much is college going to cost when she gets there? And I think genuinely it's supposed to be, when she reaches college, a college degree at a university in Florida, and there's so many great ones here, but let's just use the local one, USF. Great college, great university, but still, you know, $100,000 would not be considered outlandish to say that's what it would cost all in, you know, not just tuition. And so that legitimately scares my wife and I, and we really, really feel like, and why I love what you're doing is it necessary? And when I say necessary, I think a college degree is necessary, but is an online college degree that would cost 10% of that total better? Is a gap year better? We got the opportunity when we had the online company to live over in Europe for 5 months, and we put my daughter into online school for the first half of her first grade, and she excelled in that. And we got done with all of her school, everything that she needed to have done by noon. And then we would try to wrap up what we needed to do. And we were living in Berlin first. And we would just get out and go find the local playgrounds. And we would go look, we would do graffiti tours. We just all really enjoy graffiti and just the amazing artwork that people do. And the idea that it doesn't last, you know, it's probably one of my favorite art forms, is that at any time it could be covered over. You know, so it's limited in a way. And so we would go walking around the city. We loved Berlin, and just get out and explore and be around people who didn't talk like us, look like us, you know, who are shocked to hear us speak English. You learn to bag your groceries very fast because they are waiting for you to fail as the American in the store and not be able to get the stuff in. And it was a personal goal of mine to not be beat by the person who was slinging groceries across the register as fast as they humanly could, and I would just be as ready as I could with the bag on the other end and shoving it all in there. And then I had this little table off to the side, and then you have to go resort everything. But I mean, I'm telling you, the eggs went in sideways, the bread went, you know. But we had a great experience, and so we went to Berlin. We were in Berlin for 2 months. We were went to Athens, Greece for a little bit, and basically we just did Airbnbs, and we tried to live cheap, you know, and then we made our way through Brussels. We were in Kaiserslautern. We went down to Munich for a little bit and actually got to go to Oktoberfest, which was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I had some friends there, so that was great. And then made our way to London and lived in two different places, Hackney Wick in London and then Notting Hill in London. And we fell in love with that city. I could easily live there again. What an amazing, amazing, fun city. And the multiculturalism there. You could sit on the top level of a double-decker bus and hear four languages easy, you know, and people don't think of London that way, but it is very multicultural. And my daughter had exposure to that, homelessness, people asking for money on the street, and that affected her greatly. And so she decided to raise money one time. And so she raised money and we did that in Berlin. And I thought that was a wonderful experience. And, yeah, just trying to give her other experiences outside of school.
Right.
And trying to think about how to re-engineer education, which I know is your expertise and what you guys are doing. And I love it because, yeah, there's just so many ways to do this now. You're not stuck to one way. And I think that's amazing. But at the same time, I can't help but have that dad fear, you know, of like, are we making the right decision? You know, I don't want to take my experiences from college, which are generally very positive. So are my wife's. She also went to UGA. And so we both had great college experiences, but I don't want to label my daughter with that and say, well, but I did. So you will.
Right.
When the reality is she could be in the Peace Corps getting her online degree and having amazing experience in the world and go, yeah, but I don't miss college because I didn't have your college experience. I don't, you know, I didn't go to football games. That wasn't my thing or, you know, so what is she going to miss if she's not, you know, so I want her to have her own experience. I want her to find her path, but at the same time, have enough connections, be out there in the world and meeting people via LinkedIn, you know, when she's a little bit older and things like that, that she doesn't have to worry about, will the piece of paper get me a job on the other side? Because it didn't 20 years ago or 21 years ago now. that's depressing. Ah. 21 years ago. And I don't believe it will for her.
Right.
You know, so there's a general fear there. Yeah. Of trying to figure this out.
You know, it's interesting because as fathers of this generation coming up, I think you're bringing up very good points. Opportunity costs, right? Like, so what are they? What is the experiences? And you know, we've talked about this before. Is getting out of the way slightly of our own kids? Let me ask you this then. Obviously, it is pretty unclear and. Family does have a very big effect on education and moving anybody and everybody forward. Also mentors, I'm hearing from you, networking. What are some things you would like to see in her next 8 years of education for your daughter, either traditionally or not, or at least a school to provide? And I know that's a big question, but what have you ever thought about what would be the... These are the deal breakers. This needs to happen.
Finance, first and foremost. I want nothing more for her to understand finances from a personal level, but also, you know, up towards business and stuff. I never had a finance course until I had maybe microeconomics in college. And when I was a freshman, it was completely legal for MBNA to you signed up for a credit card and they gave you a free t-shirt. And I was a poor freshman and I wanted that t-shirt and it was on my way to my next class. I mean, directly in path. And now it's illegal to do that. Yeah. But at the time it was okay in 96. And that t-shirt is one of the most expensive t-shirts. It would rival anything Kanye West is putting out there, I think. it was probably is worth or cost, I should say, somewhere in the order of $30,000 when it was all said and done. And this is a guy, I'm a guy who had it was given to me. My parents paid for my college tuition. They mm-hmm. paid for everything. I walked out of college debt-free, student debt-free. Mm-hmm. What an amazing thing that is. I mean, yeah. to know that they did that. And my mom went back to work to make sure that she could, you know, her and my dad could provide for me and my brother. And I'm so, so grateful. What I didn't get, and it's certainly no pointing fingers at anybody, but it simply wasn't there, was the education for my own finances. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it. I really didn't understand debt. I just thought it was a fun card. I hate to say it because it sounds so ridiculous now, but it really was the case. And I think a lot of kids are still there.
Yeah,
this is not pre-internet, but certainly, you know, not as prevalent, obviously. So I think kids have a lot more resources now to be financially literate. Mm-hmm. But it's such a big deal. It's yeah. such a big student debt scares me more than anything else. I refuse to let my daughter have it. Mm-hmm. I refuse. You know, I just cannot imagine sending her out in the world post-college saddled with debt and having to make decisions about a career or job right. because she has to pay the bills, not because she finds joy in what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And so that's right. That's the difference between a job and a career.
Absolutely.
And if I can help her with that and not help her not make the mistakes that her dad did with debt, just revolving debt, mm-hmm. credit cards, and how much that took to work out of that and get debt free again years later.
Yeah.
That would be one thing for sure. Other than that, I hope in the next 8 years that more opportunities show up for her to have a hybrid system. With the rise of bullying, I know I can't helicopter parent my student, and I think you got to learn the way the world is, unfortunately. But you know, I'm sure you could say we could talk for 3 more hours. You could tell me stories about being an educator, and you know, horror stories of bullying and stuff. And so that worries me because, you know, when we were kids, we say it all the time, right? Like if I did something stupid in the hallway, it only made it as far as the hallway,
right?
And you may hear about it the next day, but it died. And the idea now that you can just be a kid and trip and it can go viral is so scary and so ridiculous. And I truthfully don't know how kids deal with this. I think it would have swallowed me up, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I was strong enough to handle that. I give kids a lot of credit that they can. So I would love to see an opportunity if my daughter decides to go farther with gymnastics, where we could basically say, hey, look, You can go to your gymnastics studio and do your classes there, get your training. Cause I mean, if you're going to do 2 hours, look, the traditional system, if she just follows it, right. We know what this looks like.
Yep.
It's go to school. You know, maybe may take a bus, not take a bus. Okay. That adds more time, get home from school, 2 hours of gymnastics practice. Cause that's what it would be at that level. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, some ridiculous amounts of homework, maybe, getting to bed at 10, 11 o'clock at night and getting up at 6 and rinse and repeat. And then nutrition, obviously a huge, big deal, and not getting the right nutrition in the morning and being like me. I used to zonk out in my home room because I had nothing good going for me. I was eating Entenmann's donuts, as I already mentioned, and I had a sugar problem as a kid. So I was eating Entenmann's donuts and could not figure out why I couldn't stay awake in school. Yeah. You know, these are the things we're smarter about now. And, you know, the YouTubes have helped and stuff like that, people mm-hmm. helping, but I would love to see her have an opportunity to actually not have to go to like a traditional middle/high school mm-hmm. and be able to continue with her, get the experience of sports training, but then also finish up that and be able to go take a job or even just an internship somewhere.
Yeah.
Say, hey, she's passionate about animals. Which she gets from her mom. She doesn't get that from me as much, but she's passionate about animals, and my wife will go volunteer when they're doing pet adoptions at the local Pet Smarts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I could totally see her just saying, hey, I just want to be a fly on the wall. Will you let me do this? And how is she supposed to have that opportunity if she sports and school have soaked up the entire day,
right?
And then you're just struggling to try to get through the day. So mm-hmm. I guess I would love to see a solution like that that was available to her, because I think she and many other kids could thrive for sure.
Yeah, those are two great things. Financial literacy is big. I have the pleasure of actually teaching a course in that, and mm-hmm. here in Illinois, it is a graduate requirement. And I just kill the budget. I'm all over the budget. Set the budget. Some of the other stuff they'll forget. Compound interest and budget. Those are the two big things. And I love that. The other thing that's very interesting is my last guest, got to give him a shout out again, Eddie Hartman, actually said, jobs should be electives. That should be an elective if you if you go to work. So I'm hearing that a lot more. And as a business educator, man, that makes me so happy, because those experiences are really what, you know, you have to add those experience. So I love that. Hey man, I want to let people know, where can they find you? How can they connect with you? And I know you're on LinkedIn. I'll put that in below. Is there other places where our audience, parents, anybody can connect with you?
Yo, LinkedIn is probably the best right now, and I would love to connect with anybody listening to this. So this year, I've really put an emphasis on building out my own personal brand. But I really did want to expand my personal brand, because I really do think that's probably the future of LinkedIn. I've run company websites and you know, stuff like that. It's never, you're never going to have the reach that you do of the people working at the company. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just something that's important. And so it's something I wanted to go after. So just this year, I started, like, literally, this is the, you know, I've been doing it like, well, almost at the end of the month. So I've almost been doing it 28 days. I decided every day I was going to post a new video on LinkedIn. And very much like we're having this conversation, my whole goal was, well, number one, be succinct, because clearly that's a problem of mine as I rattle on here.
Nine words.
Nine words. That's all my videos are nine words. That would be awesome if I could pull that off. No, what I wanted to do was I wanted to have no more than 2 minutes. And I have, I will tell you, I've already broken that rule on occasion where it's going to like 2:10, just because I was trying to, like, the story today I told you about Dr. Best. Mm-hmm. That was today's video. Stories about karate, stories about firefighting, story about being Europe. I find that in my life that I find it very easy to connect personal experiences with business experiences. Yeah. And so I thought, I don't know if that's unique or not, but I really do love telling stories, and I genuinely helping people. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty good at video because I've been doing it for a while. And I'm one of those weird people that is actually way more comfortable on video than writing copy. I was just talking to people on Clubhouse today about that and saying, like, how do I get better at copy? And everybody else is like, how do I make my very first video? I'm like, that's the easy part, you know, for me. But everybody's got their thing. So I have a series. I call it a series because I felt like it would be easier. I called it This Life of Brian, a little play on words from Monty Python. And I just thought it'd be funny. And so, yeah, you can follow the hashtag This Life of Brian. That'll pull up all my posts. And I would imagine just my posts. I don't think anybody else is using that hashtag on LinkedIn. But you can also find me on LinkedIn by just, you know, doing my first name, Brian with an I. Dot Maceri, M-A-U-C-E, or not dot, I'm sorry, dash Maceri, I think it is the way. Yeah. M-A-U-C-R-E. But This Life of Brian, and you'll find me anyway. And yeah, man, come out and tell me what you think about my videos. Tell me, you know, you need to get better at copy. Just connect and you know, let's have some conversations and meet new people, and it's led to this, which is fantastic.
That's how we met.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's working. And I use a company named I think anybody that's doing this kind of stuff is using a company named Shield, and that's watching the analytics. So that satisfies the data nerd in me, to watch all the fun little analytics and data for all the posts. And I'm just having a ball with it. I don't know. The best part about it is I've done about 30 of them, and I joked to my wife and said, I think I only have 20 good stories. And what am I going to do after that? And that's the best part, is I literally don't know. I don't know where the next story is going to come from.
Yeah.
But they keep coming, you know? And so that's interesting. Let me jot that down. Maybe that's something, you know? And so, I'm having a ball with it. And if all goes well, you know, on December 31st, I'll post my 365th daily video of hopefully less than 2 minutes. God, it's grown so much just in the month. So please come find me and let's connect and talk about it. And if you need help with video, I'm finding that a lot of people actually do have great reservations about making that first video. And what does that look like? I don't have a business for it, but I will more than happily help you and tell you what my secrets are, whatever they are. If you're looking to become more proficient at doing the same thing and getting some videos out there. And I think we both would highly encourage that.
Yes, absolutely.
It's still, believe it or not, an untapped market on LinkedIn. So
it's pretty amazing.
Come out, you know, and if you haven't started on LinkedIn, do it. and tell me you're doing it, and I'll come like and comment on all your posts.
Yeah, get you right. Started. Get those analytics going.
There you go.
Well, listen, Brian, I want to thank you so much, A, for sharing your story, and B, for being a parent and really trying to figure out things, because I know a lot of us out here are really seeing changes in education. So thank you so much for sharing your journey on Disrupt Education.
Oh, man, it was a blast. Thanks, Peter, for having me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next time on Disrupt Education. Thanks for hanging out.